anger to work for you. Befriend it by appreciating its good intentions and discovering what hurting exile within you it's been protecting. Then invite Jesus to draw near and unburden whatever isn't helpful. As a result, your anger will soften and your exile will finally get to rest. Benefits, dangers, needs, and fears. Now let's look at the benefits, dangers, needs, and fears associated with anger. Benefits. Anger is a God-given emotion intended for your welfare. Like all other emotions, your anger doesn't need to be silenced. It needs to be heard. When treated as an ally, your anger can point you to exiles needing your attention, protect you from danger, become your ambition or motivation, fight for justice, become the part of you that speaks honestly and points out difficult truths. Dangers. When your anger gets extreme, however, it can lead you into danger. Anger will express itself. The question is when, where, and how. Without healthy internal boundaries, angry parts of you will surface in unhealthy ways, leading to problems such as irritability and hostility toward others, aggressive impulses or actions, harshly judgmental attitudes toward yourself and others, cynicism or bitterness, physical tension, swearing, yelling, and negativity. Needs. To stay within healthy boundary lines, your anger needs for you to develop a comfortable distance from it so that you can help it find its rightful place in your internal family. Be open to another perspective. Be willing to be humble before God and open to His instructions on how best to proceed. Learn to pray that others with whom you are angry will be filled with the fruit of the Holy Spirit. Fears. Like all other parts of your soul, your anger is trying to help you, even though its methods at first may be misguided. To help your anger stay at a comfortable distance and become your ally, get to know its fears, such as, no one will take care of what I'm protecting. My voice won't be heard. I won't be appreciated. The injustice I suffered won't be avenged. When you notice an angry thought or feeling take over, view the uprising as an invitation to befriend this hurting part that's crying out for attention. If it's crowding your spirit-led self, listen with curiosity and gently ask it to step back so you can better understand it. And tend to the hurting part of your soul it defends. Let your anger know you care and are taking the lead. Manifestations of anger. Church pews are filled with people like Gabe who want to be loving people, but don't know how. In fact, domestic violence is so common that the law doesn't even require us as therapists to report it. You may not want to be angry, but angry parts can be stubborn. When working with your anger, identify whether its target is others, yourself, or God. Anger toward others. Passive and aggressive parts. What do you do when you're furious inside? What happens when an injustice has occurred? Gabe would either yell or sleep. Like him, you might go into fight mode in a counterproductive way. If you're overtaken by anger, you can become aggressive, taking justice into your own hands. Or you might take flight, carrying the burdens of judgmental thoughts and resentful feelings along with you. If you're passive and don't advocate for yourself, you're not honoring yourself as a person made in the image of God. The path to meaningful relationships and abundant living involves pausing when you want to fight or take flight, honoring the part of you that's angry, and offering the time and space it needs to gain perspective. It also means praying for that part of yourself and asking God to help it see as He sees. Once that part of you feels witnessed and understood, you can determine what action to take on its behalf. You might want to speak calmly on behalf of your anger to the person who hurt you. You can also become intentional about channeling anger's power in productive ways. Once you befriend your anger, you'll be able to lead it in taking appropriate action. Anger toward self. The inner critic. How do you deal with anger toward yourself? I, Kim, had a client who didn't see the harm in berating herself. So I asked her if she would talk to her children that way. She paused for a moment and replied, "If I talked to my children the way I talk to myself, I would be reported to the Department of Child Protective Services." You, too, may have an inner critic that drags you down. A voice inside that says things you wouldn't say to your worst enemy. "You worthless idiot. Why do you always do that?" If so, you've met your inner critic, the part of you that thrives on letting you know about every little thing you could have done better. Your inner critic is a protector. It has the good intention of trying to help you do your best. But its strategy is limited and keeps you from experiencing the compassionate presence of your spirit-led self. If you notice this angry part berating you, ask it to give you just a little space. Then take time to focus on it and befriend it. What are its fears if it doesn't do its job? Connect with this critic and invite it to become your champion instead. Anger toward God, resentful parts. You might love God and know He wants what's best for you. And yet, parts of you may carry resentment toward Him. Perhaps you've lost a loved one and asked, "How could God take that special person from me?" You may have been treated unfairly, or you may feel that your life's achievements just never measure up. You tell yourself that God is good all the time, that He means well for you, and that He's working out things for your good. But a part of you doesn't buy it and has made up its own story. Why bother praying? God doesn't care. Does He enjoy watching me suffer? A part of you may be carrying belief burdens like these. If so, you may rebel against God or descend into self-pity. If any part of you is struggling with these feelings, take a U-turn. Focus, befriend, invite, unburden, and recruit that renegade to integrate with your soul's faithful team of rivals. God put boundaries on chaos. Anger can feel chaotic, and so can other emotions. The task is to let God help you put boundaries around your chaotic feelings. Like the Old Testament prophet Jonah, you can become so overwhelmed by bitterness, for example, that your life spirals into chaos. But just as God contained chaos in the beginning, with His help, you can grow to love the most difficult parts of your soul and find that the boundary lines fall in pleasant places. Psalm 16, verse 6. The book of Genesis teaches that, in the beginning, the earth was without form and void, and darkness was over the face of the deep. Genesis chapter 1, verse 2, ESV. The Hebrew words for formless and void can be translated as emptiness or chaos, and signify purposelessness and despair in our lives. In the biblical creation narrative, God set a boundary by creating light. And God said, "Let there be light." And God separated the light from the darkness. God called the light day, and the darkness He called night. Genesis chapter 1, verse 3, and verses 4 through 5, ESV. God took what had been chaos and established the beautiful rhythm of day and night. After limiting the darkness, God created another epic boundary when He said, "Let the water under the sky be gathered to one place, and let dry ground appear." Genesis chapter 1, verse 9. In the ancient Near East, the Hebrew word for waters again could be understood to mean chaos, and could signify anger and destruction. In the creation story, the source of chaos is not identified. But we do learn that the power of God's spoken word placed boundaries around chaos, allowing the dry land to exist in harmony with the water. As God separated light from darkness and the waters from the dry land, He can establish boundaries within your soul. He can take your anger and despair and turn them into something beautiful. Even the wind and the waves obey Him. Your anger, when transformed in the presence of your spirit-led self, can remind you that you have more power than you know. As your anger finds its God-given role, it can help you effect positive change in your soul. Change that will benefit you, your family, your workplace, and your community. Should your anger stem from suffering personal pain or injustice, it may prompt you to join a ministry or start a social enterprise to help others who have suffered a similar wrong. Instead of causing you to feel stuck, your anger can offer guidance and become one of your wisest consultants and greatest allies. One time, Jesus was on a boat with some friends. Suddenly, a raging storm moved in, and the waves started flooding the boat. At Jesus' command, the winds and waves died down, just as he stilled the waves in the creation narrative. And that day, on the boat with his friends, he can be the eye in the center of your storm. Remember the words of the classic hymn, "Be still, my soul, the waves and winds still know his voice who ruled them while he dwelt below." Chapter 10, Boundaries with Fear and Anxiety. Try to keep your small, fearful self close to you. Let it teach you its wisdom. Let it tell you that you can live instead of just surviving. Gradually, you will become one, and you will find that Jesus is living in your heart and offering you all you need. Henry Nouwen, The Inner Voice of Love. For God did not give us a spirit of timidity or cowardice or fear, but he has given us a spirit of power and of love and of sound judgment and personal discipline, abilities that result in a calm, well-balanced mind and self-control. 2 Timothy chapter 1, verse 7, The Amplified Bible. Fear, noun, an unpleasant emotion caused by the threat of danger, pain, or harm. Anxiety, noun, a feeling of worry, nervousness, or unease about something with an uncertain outcome. What if we told you it takes fear to have courage? Think of the thing that frightens you most. Moses, for example, a hero of faith, feared the call on his life to lead a great nation out of slavery and into the promised land. Overcome by the fearful part of himself, he gave God several reasons why he couldn't obey. He doubted himself, he feared rejection by the people God had asked him to lead, and he didn't speak fluently. In fact, he may have had a speech impediment. Exodus chapter 4, verses 1 through 10. Moses had real fears that he brought to God, and God answered them one by one. God responded to Moses' fear, not with a platitude or pep talk, but with a promise to stay near. "I will be with you," Exodus chapter 3, verse 12. Eventually, Moses liberated the Hebrew nation from a tyrannical Pharaoh. You too can do mighty things in the spiritual realm when you face your fears. In general, where are you in relation to fear? How about anxiety? Do you feel too close? Are you at a comfortable distance? Or are you too far? Megan takes a U-turn when she feels anxiety. As we heard in chapters 2 and 3, Megan's striving task manager was causing tension in her relationship with her husband. Her well-intended protector would prioritize Megan's never-ending to-do list above almost anything else, including having meaningful conversations with her spouse and enjoying time with her children. I, Kim, sought to help Megan take a U-turn with this hard-working part. Focus and befriend. As we began, I asked Megan to close her eyes and tell me where in her body she was carrying her striving task manager part. She said she felt it in her shoulders, which just happened to be all hunched up. Inviting her to practice spirit-led self-leadership and to use her God-given imagination, I asked her if she could envision this hard-working part. Closing her eyes and pausing for a moment, Megan replied that she could imagine herself walking up an eternal escalator, carrying heavy buckets of water in both hands. This part said to her, "I'm lazy if I'm not working. People are counting on me to bring order and structure. How could I give myself time to rest?" "How do you feel toward this task manager with so many fears?" I asked. Megan replied, I hate it. I want it to go away. It's wrecking my marriage. It makes sense that a part of you doesn't like your task manager. Do you think you could notice that critical part and ask it to step back? You might want to let it know that your task manager will become calm when you connect to it from a place of compassion, I said. From her spirit-led self, Megan asked this critical part to give her some space. She then was able to befriend her internal task manager and welcome it to speak freely. As a result, she felt more peaceful. Invite and unburden. Though I knew Megan had been a Christian for many years, I asked whether Jesus was near, her task manager part. Megan replied that it knew about him, but it didn't sense his presence. She embraced the idea of inviting the anxious part of her soul to get to know him better. I said a prayer, then asked if she could imagine Jesus near this burdened part. After some silence, she said yes. In her mind's eye, the escalator had disappeared, and she had put down the buckets of water. "We're sitting together," she said. "I feel light, strong, and still. I have a new feeling of taking in God's love without having to do anything." As Megan felt calmer, she gained access to the exiled fear this anxious task manager had been protecting. And, as is common, this exile started showing her a memory. "When I was 8 years old, we lived in a nice neighborhood, but ours was the smallest house on the block," she said. "Sometimes at night I would walk around outside and look into the windows of the big houses. In my mind, I can see a window I used to look into a lot. Inside were two armchairs facing each other and a clean, white carpet. My carpet looks nothing like that. It's a mess because of my boys." I asked Megan if she sensed Jesus' nearness to the fearful part of herself. At first, she said she couldn't. I then asked if the part wanted Jesus to draw near, and Megan nodded her head. We prayed to invite Jesus to be close, and, after some moments of quiet, I asked if she could sense his presence. Megan replied, "Yes, he is like the sun shining on me." "What's happening now?" I asked. "I'm imagining that we're leaving the window and walking down a path together. I feel lighter. I'm realizing that I like my living room carpet covered with toys because it reminds me of my kids," she said. I asked Megan if she wanted to update her 8-year-old part with all that she had learned and how she had grown since she was a little girl. She said this fearful part became happier when it noticed how mature she is now. "What does she think of you, of who you've become?" "She's happy that I'm doing all the things I always wanted to do, that I have a job and a wonderful family, and she's realizing my life is more fun than what was happening or not happening in those empty living rooms." Returning to Megan's task manager, I asked if Jesus wanted to give this hard-working part a gift. After a long pause, she simply said, "Being still together." Softly, she asked him when she could stop working so hard. In her heart, he answered, "Do what you can, and then let the rest go. I am with you, no matter what." Megan then commented, "There's less water in the buckets now. Much of that water came from the idea that I had to do it all. Now I know that I only have to do what I can. Responsibility for the whole world is not in my hands." Integrate. "What new role would your task manager like to play now?" I asked. "It wants to let me know when it's time to slow down," she replied. Megan's hard-working part had held the extreme belief that she should never rest, never play, never stop working. Now, having a broader perspective, Megan's striving task manager wanted to become her trusted advisor and alert her when it was time to rest. At our final session, Megan walked into my office more casually than in the early days of our work together. She didn't need to launch into a litany of issues, because I already knew her well, and she had grown to understand herself with compassion. Instead, she told me about how she had been home one night and decided to put off loading the dishwasher because she wanted to spend time playing cards with her family. For her, playing cards was a giant step. She laughed as she said to me, "I can't believe it. Out of habit, I was aware of the dishes the whole time. But my faithful new advisor kept reminding me how important it is to relax with my husband and kids." Summary of Megan's U-turn. To take a U-turn, Megan first focused on where she was feeling physical tension, in her shoulders. Closing her eyes and engaging her God-given capacity for creativity, she imagined her task manager as an image of herself walking up an eternal escalator. To befriend this striving part of her soul, Megan listened and prayerfully imagined a younger, exiled part that had picked up extreme beliefs when looking into others' windows as a child. We realized that her anxious manager was trying to meet the needs of this fearful exile. Soon, Megan invited Jesus to be with this part that was carrying the fear of her family's uncertain future. Megan's burden was the meaning that a young part of her had created as a result of growing up in a smaller house than her prosperous neighbors. This part of her had developed the belief that a large house equals a happy life. Unburdening followed when her exiled part drew near to Jesus. Megan said she felt lighter because that belief burden was now gone. She gained fresh perspective, realizing that happiness wasn't just about the success she had achieved. She now related better with her striving task manager and shifted her focus to spending time with her husband and children. Megan's unburdening freed her to move forward, building her life as a spirit-led woman. Finally, during the integration step, Megan's previously anxious part took on the different task of letting her know when she needed to rest. Moving forward, Megan resolved to listen to her new trusted advisor, recognizing its invaluable role of reminding her when it was time to relax her shoulders, set aside her to-do list, and enjoy resting and playing with her family. Getting to know fear and anxiety. Just as Megan addressed her anxiety and fear, so can you. To begin, consider the difference between these two related emotions. It might help to think of fear as an exile with a specific present concern. This vulnerable part of your internal family might fear being hurt, rejected, powerless, or physically unsafe. Once identified, you can calm your fear. The problem is that we all tend to avoid facing our fears. And that's when anxiety steps in as a protector. Unlike fear, anxiety is chaotic, future-oriented, and creative. It thinks up all kinds of things for you to worry about, things that may have no bearing on your current reality. In doing so, your anxiety protects you from facing the real things you fear by keeping you distracted. It's often easier to dwell on the things that might happen than to implement a plan to counter real threats. Your exiled fear doesn't need to be starved or shunned. It needs to be understood. But to befriend your fear, befriend your anxiety first. Let's look at the benefits, dangers, needs, and concerns associated with the anxiety at work within your soul. Benefits, dangers, needs, and concerns. Benefits. When respected as a valuable part of your soul, your anxiety can signal the presence of a fearful exile needing your attention, inform you of emotional, spiritual, and physical challenges that need to be faced, protect you by warning you of things that might go wrong, help you be more careful, be sensitive to change and help you plan ahead, become the part of you that acts courageously, humbly leading others, reminding you that you're a perceptive, tender soul. Dangers. Anxiety will express itself. The question is, when, where, and how? When your anxiety becomes extreme, ironically, it can create the very dangers you're trying to avoid. Without healthy internal boundaries, your anxiety will surface in troubling ways, such as physical limitations, shortness of breath, lightheadedness, or sleeplessness, for example, insecurity, inordinate people-pleasing, inability to focus or concentrate, feelings of chaos or being out of control, internal chatter, confusion, or chronic worry. Hypervigilance. Catastrophizing, such that problems seem bigger than they are. Panic attacks. Needs. To stay within healthy boundary lines, your anxiety needs to develop courage with God's help. For you to help it recognize that it is only one part of you, not the sum total of who you are. For you to lovingly remind it of the truth of God's power. Fears. Like every internal protector, your anxiety wants to help, even though its methods at first may be misguided and counterproductive. To help your anxiety stay within healthy boundary lines and become your ally, get to know its concerns about letting your spirit-led self take the lead, such as, I'll put myself in danger. I won't be prepared. I'll mishandle a responsibility. I'll be rejected and alone. I'll disappoint someone. I've taken on too much. If you notice anxiety in your life, take a U-turn and focus on this anxious part that's crying out for your attention. If it's taking you over, listen and befriend it. It will relax and transform into a helpful advisor when it knows your spirit-led self is there, leading the way.
Manifestations of fear and anxiety. It's helpful to group anxious parts into three common categories: worrying and controlling parts, people-pleasing parts, and doubting parts. Consider the root fears that tend to lie behind each one. Fear of the unknown, worry, and control. My Allison's client, Steve, worried about everything. He worried that if he didn't marry, he would grow old alone, and that if he were to marry, his wife would end up cheating on him. He worried that if he stayed in his job, he would burn out, and that if he left his job, he would never find another one. And ironically, Steve's unhappiness was not something Steve thought much about. The truth was, Steve had never addressed the painful events in his past. Instead, his worrying manager kept him distracted by focusing on problems that didn't exist. If, like Steve, worry is driving your life, it's time to set some gentle boundaries with your worry and listen to your fear. In Steve's case, worry kept him passive. In other cases, worry manifests as a desire to control, sometimes aggressively, your relationships, your work, or other areas of your life to ward off any possible danger or perceived threat. Your urge to control the people around you may lead to manipulation, abuse of power, or boundary violations. For example, a family came to see me, Allison, concerned about their 14-year-old daughter, Lindsay, who was showing a rebellious streak. I soon discovered that the mom, Diane, wouldn't let her daughter out of their home unless she was with an adult or at school. When Diane was a young child, she had nearly been abducted by strangers while playing outside by herself. Now, as a mom, she was terrified that something bad might happen to her own child. A controlling manager constantly warned her, "You must vigilantly monitor Lindsay's every move." Though well-intended, Diane's controlling impulse was encroaching on her daughter's need to become more independent. Diane was able to befriend her propensity to control, and she invited Jesus to be near the traumatized exile this manager was protecting. With his help, she could calm herself when she feared for her daughter's safety. The world may not be safe, but God wants me to put my trust in him. Together, Diane and her daughter negotiated new rules that took into account both of their needs. Pay attention if you have a worried part, either passive or controlling, that eclipses your spirit-led self. It might indeed keep you safe. You might also miss out, though, on the joys of adventure and intimacy. Thankfully, there's another way. It starts with befriending your worry and gently helping it to step back so you can get to the real source of your need. Acknowledge that part's good intention to keep you and the ones you love safe. Once you befriend your worry from your spirit-led self, you'll be able to give it the care it needs so that it stays within healthy boundaries in your soul. Then you can invite God to be near the fearful exile it protects and provide the comfort and practical help it needs. Fear of rejection, people pleaser parts. Exiled fear of losing others' love often leads one to develop a protective people pleaser part. Your internal people pleaser, sensitive to the needs of others as it might be, needs gentle boundaries too. If its pleasing actions stem from a fear of rejection buried deep inside, the part won't truly be giving out of love for others. In this case, this pleasing part of you is too close. On the other hand, if you don't care at all what others think, then this part of you might be too far. Focus, befriend, and thus gain some perspective about your inner people pleaser when it becomes extreme. You'll then be able to attend to the precious exile hiding underneath. Signs that you have a people pleaser part might be not saying no when no is needed. Feeling resentful of the very people you're working overtime to please. Telling a white lie to ward off an angry reaction. When you're pleasing others to avoid conflict, you're not giving voice to your fear. That's the time to focus on what's keeping you from bravely expressing your needs. Once you befriend the part of yourself that's pleasing others out of fear, you'll be able to lead yourself through honest conversations and develop deeper, more genuine relationships with others. You can set gentle boundaries with your inner people pleaser and extend loving compassion to the fearful part of you not wanting to let others down. Imagine the freedom of releasing the burden of feeling that you need to please everyone and replacing it with a humble acceptance of your human limitations. Fear of trusting God. Doubt. Some of the giants of our Christian faith, those known for heroic acts of faithful obedience, struggled with menacing doubt. Mother Teresa, who devoted her life to caring for the poorest of the poor out of love for God, described her doubt this way. Where is my faith? Even deep down, right in, there is nothing but emptiness and darkness. My God, how painful is this unknown pain? It pains without ceasing. I have no faith. I dare not utter the words and thoughts that crowd in my heart and make me suffer untold agony. So many unanswered questions live within me. I am afraid to uncover them because of the blasphemy. If there be God, please forgive me. Though her journals reflect years of struggling with doubt, Mother Teresa chose to invite Jesus to draw near to her pain. She served him until the end of her days, writing, "Here I am, Lord. With joy I accept all to the end of my life, and I will smile at your hidden face, always." What do you do when your doubt is crowding your heart and you're afraid to acknowledge unanswered questions? Christian author C.S. Lewis offers a way through the dilemma of doubt. Faith, expressed as obedience, he said, even in the face of doubt, is a powerful spiritual move. He conveyed the contours of his own doubt and faith when he composed the Screwtape Letters. This classic takes the form of a series of letters from an elder demon to his nephew Wormwood. One message from Uncle Screwtape to Wormwood reveals how the greatest threat to the powers of darkness would not be possible without an element of doubt. "Our cause is never more in danger," he wrote, "than when a human, no longer desiring, but still intending, to do God's will, looks round upon a universe from which every trace of him seems to have vanished, and asks why he has been forsaken and still obeys." What if your doubt, like Lewis's, could transform into courage and become your faithful companion on your lifelong journey toward obedience? Turning fear and anxiety into allies. Your fear and anxiety, when transformed in the presence of your spirit-led self, can become faithful servants in your internal family. When they make themselves known, befriend them and listen to them from your spirit-led self. They can remind other, more self-sufficient parts of you that it's time to ask for help, that you don't have to face your challenges alone. Let your fear and anxiety prompt you to invite Jesus to draw near, strengthening your faith. Without these two powerful emotions, you wouldn't have the opportunity to become courageous and faithful, to rise above and show God that He matters more to you than your circumstances, that you trust in Him. When befriended, fear can lead to an abiding dependence on Jesus and a deeply satisfying intimacy with Him. Get to the root of your fear underneath the chaos of anxiety. A part of me is frightened, are powerful words to say as you draw near to God and live from your spirit-led self. As with Moses, God may not take away your fear, but He will strengthen you with courage as you trust in Him. The parts of your soul that have known anxiety and fear can become your beloved companions as you faithfully embrace what is in the words of poet Mary Oliver, your one wild and precious life. Chapter 11. Boundaries with Sadness. There are many things that can only be seen through eyes that have cried. Archbishop Oscar Romero of San Salvador. The Lord is near to the brokenhearted and saves the crushed in spirit. Psalm 34:18, ESV. Sad, adjective, affected by unhappiness or grief, sorrowful or mournful. You need your pain. Grief makes you real, and disappointment makes you resilient. Heartache fueled the creativity of Kierkegaard, Beethoven, and Van Gogh, for example, and countless other luminaries throughout history. Vision, innovation, and dependence on the Spirit are born from suffering. The pain of our clients has driven them to seek Jesus and rise to new spiritual heights. Likewise, your sorrow can inspire new chapters of purpose and creativity in your life. Our work gives us a close-up view of the pain people carry. The woman whose husband ignores her. The man whose wife and daughter died. The patient who struggles daily with the limitations of a chronic illness. The student who fears she'll never find herself or someone to love. When nothing is working and God feels absent, the silence can be excruciating. Consider Elijah, the Old Testament prophet who performed miracles, including raising a child from the dead and calling forth fire to rain down from the sky. Yet even Elijah experienced profound sorrow and darkness in his soul, asking God at one point to end his life. It is enough now, O Lord, take away my life, for I am no better than my fathers. 1 Kings 19:4, ESV. Many of us have a part of our soul like Elijah that is so overcome with sorrow we lose sight of God's power. How can we respond to this brokenness? Henry Nouwen asked in his beautiful book, Life of the Beloved. And he answered by portraying the painful aspects of life as a faithful offering. I'd like to suggest two ways. First, befriending it. And second, putting it under the blessing. No matter the cause of your pain, your heart can become a reservoir of compassion and empathy for others. To paraphrase Nouwen, through your experience of suffering, you can be taken, blessed, broken, and given for the world. In general, where are you in relation to your sadness? Are you too close? Are you at a comfortable distance? Or are you too far? Andrea takes a U-turn when she feels sadness. Andrea, a 30-something math teacher, came to see me, Allison, a few weeks after learning of her fiancé's infidelity, downcast eyes belying her smile. A capable woman known for her cheerful demeanor and can-do mentality, Andrea hated feeling sad. Focus and befriend. "What's wrong with me? I have so many crazy emotions," Andrea said, smoothing the crease in her pressed pencil skirt. "I can't stop crying, but then I feel so angry. I don't know what to do with myself." "Can you take a moment and focus on the part of yourself that's understandably angry, Andrea?" I asked. "What would it like you to know?" Andrea paused and checked in with her angry part. "It's afraid that the sadness will overwhelm me," she confided. "What if I can't stop crying?" Aware that Andrea's anger was protecting a grief-stricken exile, I asked, "Can you let your anger know that we won't let the sadness overwhelm you? We want to get to know it and give it the care it needs. Is there anything your anger needs to help it give you some space so you can spend some time with your sadness? Andrea thought for a moment and replied, It wants to know that I'll cry only for a little while and then move on with my day. That seems fair. What amount of time seems reasonable to your anger? I asked. I think if I could set aside a few hours this coming weekend to talk to friends and journal, that would be a good start. Great, I said. Is it okay with your angry part to spend the remainder of our time together today with your sadness? Yes, my anger feels good about that, she said with all sincerity. It feels relieved that you'll be here to help me keep the boundary. Now that Andrea's sadness had our attention, the tears she had been stifling began streaming down her face. I checked in with Andrea to see if her sorrow was overwhelming her, and she assured me that it was not. It feels good to finally cry, she said. What would your sadness like you to know? Sam was an angel to me when we first met. He was my first love. My own dad left my mom and me, but Sam stayed close. He promised me a life that would be different, full of love and laughter. I felt so much security and stability with him. Over the past year, he has changed. I can see it now. But I just can't believe he's throwing it all away. Invite and unburden. Andrea seemed calmer now, though tears still cascaded down her cheeks. I still love Sam, and it's hard to explain, but I feel like I can't be whole without him. It sounds like your sad part has picked up a belief burden that you can't be whole unless Sam is in your life. Did I understand you correctly? Yes, she said. I know that's crazy because our relationship's been difficult lately, but some part of me feels like I need him to survive. I'm curious whether you sense that Jesus is near as you share this very real concern that you may not be able to survive without Sam. Andrea quietly nodded and said that she sensed Jesus' presence. He's reminding me that though Sam has changed and our relationship is broken, the good that was there can't ever be taken away from me. The love he showed me and the kindness that I glimpsed, they were imperfect in him, but reflections of what I can always find in God. From her spirit-led self, Andrea invited Jesus to be near the sad part of her that bravely bore the weight of her false belief. Once Jesus drew near, Andrea unburdened, as she recognized that God's love, not Sam's, made her whole. Did she still feel sad? Certainly. But she also felt empowered to move forward a stronger, freer young woman. Integrate. Andrea, how is your angry protector part responding to what just happened? I asked. It's much calmer now, she said as she wiped her eyes, her facial expression reassuringly congruent with her words. Is there a new role this anger would like to take on now that it's able to relax? I asked. Moving forward, my anger can help me advocate for myself when communicating with Sam, she replied thoughtfully. It liked when you suggested that my sadness didn't have to overwhelm me. My anger wants me to speak on behalf of my sadness. It can help me be strong when I let him know how much he's hurt me. The angry and sad parts of Andrea have been vying for control. When integrating them, Andrea realized her anger wanted to take on a new role. As an advocate, it could help her speak with strength on behalf of her sadness, and she no longer felt chaotic internally. Summary of Andrea's U-turn. When Andrea took a U-turn and focused on her sadness, an angry part of her stepped in to protest the idea, not wanting her to be overwhelmed by it. Leading from her spirit-led self, Andrea negotiated with her anger, helping it understand that she would set gentle boundaries with her grief. In doing so, she learned that her sadness didn't want to overwhelm her. It simply wanted to be acknowledged as valid. As Andrea grew in compassion for her sadness, she was able to differentiate from it and create a gentle boundary around it in her heart. Like a small hurting child, it needed her presence and the security of loving containment. Andrea had been afraid of her sorrow, and so had tried to keep it away. Ironically, when she befriended it and let it come in a little closer, she didn't feel overwhelmed by it. Instead, she felt calmer. Getting to know your sadness. How is your relationship with a part of yourself that feels deep sorrow? If your sadness is too close, you might experience loneliness, self-pity, and depression. If your sadness is too far, however, you may deny the reality of this important emotion. Like Andrea, you may have an angry protector striving valiantly to keep your sadness at bay. Either way, your sadness needs your care. Become curious about it, listen to it, and befriend it from your spirit-led self. Are you mourning the loss of a person or a dream? How you process this experience will determine its effect on your life. If your suffering has become your identity, it's too close to you. Create a sacred space for suffering in your heart, and it will make you more like Christ. Benefits, dangers, needs, and fears. Now let's look at the benefits, dangers, needs, and fears associated with feeling sadness. Benefits. Painful loss deserves to be honored and offered up to God. When treated as an ally, the part of you carrying sadness can remind you of your need for others and for God, help you become aware of a personal loss or burden that needs to be examined, help you understand your heart and the things you deeply love, help you develop empathy and come alongside others who are suffering. Speak the truth of your story and the hardships you've faced. Dangers. Sadness will make its presence known. The question is when, where, and how. Like all other emotions, your sadness increases when swept aside. The more extreme it becomes, the more likely it will lead you into danger. If not lovingly welcomed, your sadness will surface in unhealthy ways, leading to feelings of being invisible, worthless, or unlovable, depression and despair, weariness and exhaustion, rumination about painful memories, insecurity, false guilt, and chronic shame. Needs. To stay within healthy boundary lines, your sadness needs a safe place to grieve the people, relationships, or opportunities you've lost. Validation of the sorrow it holds versus a quick fix. A gentle boundary so it can find its rightful place in your internal family and become your sacred companion. Fears. Like all other aspects of yourself, the part of you holding on to painful memories or the loss of dreams serves a purpose, even though your protectors may not yet understand its value. To assist your sadness in becoming your ally and staying within proper boundary lines, get to know its fears about letting your spirit-led self take the lead. Some examples of these fears are, if I move forward with my life, the deceased loved one I'm mourning might be forgotten. Forgiving implies that my pain never happened. Exposing my sadness will drive people even further away. No one will pay attention to me if I'm not in need. When a person or situation threatens to overwhelm you, take a U-turn. Focus on the sorrowful part of yourself needing your attention. If it's too close, listen well. Show up and ask it to give you a little space so you can get to know it better. If it's too far away, invite it in closer so that you can learn more about it. As the part of you carrying sadness develops trust in God, made known through the loving attention of your spirit-led self, this lost sheep wandering in your soul will settle into the arms of the Good Shepherd. John 10:7-10. There's a difference between moving on and moving forward. You may never forget about your loss. As you befriend your sadness, though, you can move forward on your journey to an abundant life. Causes of your sadness. It's helpful to think of the causes of sadness in three categories. Sadness as a response to the loss of something good, the loss of something bad, and the loss of what might have been. Sorrow in response to losing what was good. Loss pervades our human existence. If you haven't known loss, then you haven't known love. Most of us have known both. You might have had to leave a city and friends that you love. Or perhaps you're mourning a fractured relationship or one that ended. Maybe you're silently grieving the death of a parent, sibling, or child. When I, Allison, was in my 20s, my parents sold the house of my childhood and moved far away. I had lived every day of my first 18 years in that house, just down the street from my grandparents and a few miles from the church and schools that had shaped everything about me. At the time, I acknowledged the change as unavoidable and thought I had moved on. But the loss of this tight-knit community caught up to me several years later, in my 30s, when I started wanting to put down roots. My exiled sadness overwhelmed me, and I started longing to see my childhood home. Miranda Lambert sings poignantly about this exact same feeling in her song, "The House That Built Me." The next summer, I returned to my hometown for the first time in years and parked in front of my old house. Something inside of me needed to grieve. I knocked on the door and asked the stranger who opened it if I could come in. I barely greeted her, my eyes welling with tears said enough. She graciously left me alone to walk through every room of that house, retracing precious memories with each step. Though filled with sadness, this bittersweet goodbye to my childhood home helped me reconnect with parts of my soul. I couldn't go back in time, nor did I really want to. But I could incorporate into my future what that home represented. To this day, my family and I spend time each summer back home, hiking in the mountains, chasing deer on my uncle's ranch, and revisiting beloved childhood friends. My life is more complete as a result of connecting to the sadness that overwhelmed my soul. You don't have to be ambushed by a broken heart. You can listen to your sadness and lead it with compassion. Our usual tendency is to numb pain. But when you numb your pain, you numb joyful feelings too. Focusing on and befriending your sadness brings back to life parts of your soul that were frozen. It moves you forward into new hope and helps you recognize and stay connected to what matters most. Joy and sadness, two sides of the same coin. Your soul holds joy and sadness. Both parts want to serve the good of the whole. Joy helps you laugh, and tears are vital to vibrant living too. Turn them off, and you become disconnected from precious aspects of your soul. Once you embrace your sadness, this important emotion can find a helpful role within your internal family, and your heart will develop empathy for others. The wise King Solomon said, "There is a time to weep and a time to laugh, a time to mourn and a time to dance." Ecclesiastes 3:4. How wonderful that by God's divine design, you can be truly joyful on one hand and be present to your sadness on the other. Sorrow in response to losing what was bad. Sometimes it's hard to let go of people or patterns to which you have grown accustomed, even if they weren't good for you. In fact, leaving behind something in your life that's broken sometimes hurts more than leaving behind something good. Healthy goodbyes leave us with happy memories. We look back on those people or places with fondness and hold them in our hearts. We take the good with us, even if the person or place is in our past. But saying goodbye to destructive relationships can be extremely painful. For example, I, Allison, worked with a bright, sincere woman, Maria, who had been dating an abusive, addicted man for 4 years. I asked Maria, "What keeps you from leaving?" Maria paused and then spoke honestly. "I don't want to face the pain." She had given 4 years of her life to loving someone who had hurt her repeatedly. A part of her didn't want to accept the reality that she had wasted so much time on a destructive, dead-end relationship. She was choosing the pain she knew over the pain she didn't know, and was missing an opportunity to move forward with her life. You don't have to be ruled by fear of facing the regret of past mistakes or lost years. If you're struggling to leave behind something that's broken, take a U-turn and get to know your fear. Befriending your sorrow and providing it with the comfort of your spirit-led self helps you move forward and start anew. Sorrow in response to losing a dream. In addition to befriending sadness about the loss of good and bad things in your life, Give attention to the parts of you grieving the loss of dreams that can no longer materialize. A life curtailed by physical limitations, or a happily ever after that never came true. Are you carrying disappointment about unfulfilled dreams and expectations? Does a gap exist between your hopes and the reality of your life? Be present to the part of yourself grieving this loss, even as you say goodbye to what might have been. Turning sadness into your ally. Sadness, when transformed in the presence of your spirit-led self, becomes your compassion and strength. Pain becomes redemptive when it causes you to draw near to God and experience His power. The Apostle Paul begged God to take away a thorn in his flesh. But God replied, "My grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness." 2 Corinthians 12:9. Paul understood that God wanted to shape his character and bring about spiritual fruit in his life more than he wanted Paul to be comfortable. When you befriend a sad part, God will use your pain to cultivate gentleness within your soul. Gentleness toward yourself leads to gentleness toward others, and it makes you more like Christ. When you're experiencing the grief of a loss, create space in your life for mourning. Roughly a third of the Psalms express lament. Lament signifies faith, not weakness. It shows you're hanging on. Set an intention with yourself that whenever you feel pain, you'll check in with your sad part and invite Jesus to draw near. The resulting connection matters so much now as this grieving part of you experiences afresh God's loving kindness. Blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. Matthew 5:4. Author Johnny Erickson Tada has turned the suffering of physical paralysis into a ministry to millions. She wrote, "Inner anguish forces us to embrace God out of desperate, urgent need. God is never closer than when your heart is aching. Let your sorrow lead you to deeper union with the Savior, so that as you are crucified with Him, you also may be a healing presence in the world. Humble yourselves under the mighty hand of God, that He may exalt you in due time, casting all your care upon Him, for He cares for you." 1 Peter 5:6-7, NKJV. With the cross and resurrection of Jesus, God set in motion a series of unstoppable events that will redeem every last painful experience in your life. Until then, the Spirit intercedes on your behalf. Romans 8:26 says, "The Spirit helps us in our weakness. We do not know what we ought to pray for, but the Spirit Himself intercedes for us." He prays for you when you don't have the words. On your journey through this broken, beautiful life, may your sadness know the steadfast compassion of Jesus and become one of the most honored aspects of your soul.
Chapter 12. Boundaries with Envy and Desire. "Her beauty and the moonlight overthrew ya." Leonard Cohen, Hallelujah. "Praise the Lord, my soul, and forget not all His benefits, who satisfies your desires with good things." Psalm 103, verses 2 and 5. Envy, noun, a painful or resentful awareness of an advantage enjoyed by another, joined with a desire to possess the same advantage. Desire, noun, a strong feeling of wanting to have something or wishing for something to happen. What if your envy could help you realize your God-given potential? We've all looked over the fence and thought, "The grass is greener on the other side." If your spirit-led self doesn't step up to lead that envious part of your soul, you might find it poisoning your own grass and your neighbor's lawn. What issues make you feel envy? Whose grass is greener than yours? Or do you simply wish to have a lawn to call your own? Regardless, envy works to protect you from the pain of buried hopes and dreams, either by preventing pain, as in the case with managers, or by numbing it, as firefighters try to do. In Genesis 37, we learn about Joseph and his brothers, sons of the biblical patriarch Jacob. Joseph's brothers envied Joseph because he was his father's favorite son. Even God seemed to favor him too by revealing to him in dreams the power he would one day have. Who wouldn't want